Hey, members, we'll make a start. Thank you, members. Welcome to the Audit Committee meeting of Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council on Wednesday, the 18th of March 2020. Members are reminded this meeting is being audio recorded and it is therefore important to ensure that your microphone light has switched on correctly before any comments are made and switched off when you have finished speaking. In order to avoid disruption to meetings, may I request that everyone present ensures all mobile and electronic devices are switched on to silent mode. First of all, have we any apologies? I have apologies from Karen Beattie of the Northern Ireland Audit Office and Christine Hagen from ASM, who were due to be here for an item further down the agenda, but neither of them are going to be able to be here tonight. Any other apologies? No. Thank you. Any declarations of interest? Okay, thank you. Members, as an amendment to, or an addition, sorry, to tonight's agenda, we have an update on the current position of the council to the COVID-19 situation. Your agendas haven't been updated with this item, but obviously, as you can see, it's there. The presentation will be available after the meeting. Council members will have received a number of communications this afternoon that basically outlines what's in the presentation, but so that this is a formal update for the audit committee. So Sandra is going to run through the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. So as the Chair said, presentation tonight will be distributed to all elected members so that they're all aware of the current position. I gave a verbal update at the Policy and Governance Committee earlier on in the month, so this is kind of the next stage of that. And as the Chair has said, the group party leaders will be aware of some of the stuff that we're going to be discussing. First of all, that notice that you see there is one that we have used in Council from about mid-February, whenever the Public Health Agency first outlined that there would be an issue around coronavirus. And that was immediately used by Council in terms of their approach to this. And it still really prevails in terms of the spread of infection. The best way to protect yourself and others is to wash your hands, or if you catch a cough or sneeze in a tissue, to bin it and wash your hands. So, I mean, that's a reminder that that's what we can all do to try to reduce the impact and spread of this. So moving forward, there are really three phases in the progression of the COVID-19. There was four within the government plan, the research phase, but obviously that's not relevant to us. But in terms of our progression through these phases, we are now at the delay stage in the middle there. So it's trying to slow the spread of the virus. If it does take hold, lowering the peak impact and pushing it away from the winter season. So that's what we're still attempting to do, to flatten the peak, I suppose, in terms of the projection of this. So I'm going to outline to you some of the proactive approach that the Council has taken in relation to this. I'm then going on to talk to you about the measures in place. And then I'll go on in terms of potential future actions. But if we just look, first of all, at the proactive approach of Council, later on the agenda, we will be talking about the corporate risk register, and you will see that there is a coronavirus risk raised within our risk register. It is at red, and in terms of that risk, we refer a lot to the action plan and the pandemic plan that we have in place within Council, I suppose the actions that were taken out of that. There is a daily meeting of group party leaders in relation to the changes, because things are happening every day. We have a strategic response team established, and that's meeting twice daily. So we have an incident centre established at Mossley Mill, and it meets twice daily, and then we meet group party leaders there also. We have a pandemic plan in place, as I've outlined before. It was a legacy flu pandemic plan, so we're updating it for specifics around COVID-19, which are in some places different from what that plan outlined. And all critical services in council have business continuity plans in place, and those have been reviewed and updated for our current situation. We will be producing daily situation or decision logs out of our meetings with our response team, and there will be SIPREP reports produced so that we have a record of all of the things that we have considered and the decisions that we make. There is an IT action plan in place for remote working, and that has included us purchasing some new equipment to allow people to work remotely, and we have prioritised the critical services first of all in that plan. Our environmental health team have regular communication with the public health agency so that we're completely up to date with what the guidance is coming out from the centre. We participate in civil contingency group calls, conference calls, and there was one of those this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And we have an HR and comms plan in place, and you will see the outworking of that in terms of all of the daily communications that are going out to staff and to our elected members. So then in terms of measures already in place, and I've split this between members, facilities, services and staff. So first of all, for members, as I said before, daily group party leader meetings and regular communications to members in terms of how the situation evolves. We have cancelled committee meetings until further notice, and at the council meetings it really will only be essential items that will be discussed, and we are considering the mechanisms by which we hold our council meetings, whether we need to hold them in a different way and maybe reduce them, and we will look at standing orders and work along with our group party leaders as we move through this process in terms of how that might happen, and the first of those will be on the 30th of March, so we're planning for that one in these days. Moving on to facilities then, as you will know, leisure centres and theatres are to close to the public at close of business today. Other facilities will remain open, and we will continue the high importance of regular hand washing, using hand sanitisers and ensuring that all the advisory posters are up so that people are aware, both staff and visitors to those centres, about what we require them to do. Our leases and franchisees will be provided in terms of advice, in terms of what we would ask them to do as well, in terms of hand washing and cleanliness. And cleaning regimes have been increased across council facilities, all council facilities, to enhance the cleaning, particularly on handrails, on doors, and areas where people numbers of people would be touching those surfaces. And we have antibacterial wipes and advice at hot desk areas. We also use teleconferencing and video conferencing facilities where we can for meetings to avoid people coming into close contact. In terms of our services, it is business as usual at our civic centres to date, but that may change as things unfold. As I said before, our critical services have been prioritised. All of our upcoming events have been postponed. We will maintain links to our critical suppliers to ensure that we still get delivery of supplies to council and ensure the supply chain there. The officers who go out on home visits, particularly our building control officers and our environmental health officers, will perform risk assessments before going out to premises, both for their own protection and the protection of the people who are on those locations. We have provided additional IT provision for key services. Discretionary spend is going to be centrally authorised going forward because you will be aware that as by closing facilities, our income will get reduced, but we will continue to play. There will be still some fixed costs of council that will still have to be paid. So we're going to take a proactive approach in terms of spend to ensure that all spend that we incur going forward is required for council services, and that we take a prudent approach to that. At the same time, ensuring that we're paying all of the suppliers quickly who do supply to us so that their cash flow is maintained. And that kind of moves on to that next point about businesses being advised about the continuity of payments to them. And we will ensure that we communicate that to the businesses who supply services to us. We're going to set up a project team to support Good Morning Utnapi and Good Morning Antrim. And this is our community effort to ensure that those groups are able to facilitate the needs within those communities, because that's where I suppose those needs will be known most. And there will be a support plan in place for those groups of £5,000. In terms of other council business that maybe doesn't have such a high priority, we're going to take a proportionate approach to our FOI requests and complaints. So that, we will continue to answer those, but there may be other areas of council that require a higher priority than that. So particularly maybe around performance indicators, for some of those areas, we may not be able to meet some of those as we prioritise other services of council. And we will refund anyone who has paid for theatre and conference bookings and, because of closure of our premises, are not able to avail of those services or activities. In terms of staffing, we do provide a daily communication to staff as the situation evolves, and the comms team are very much involved within that. We have identified our vulnerable employees, and home working has been facilitated for those people. We will redeploy staff of the closed facilities to cleaning within those facilities or for other community duties, of course, whilst they are still well and not at risk, and can still come and provide some assistance to council in terms of things that we need to deliver. We do promote self-isolation for symptomatic staff according to the PHA advice. And any welfare concerns of employees are supported through the HR support team, who have established a helpline so that they can people can get to them very quickly in terms of any of their concerns. We provide protective equipment for people who come to work to ensure that we can protect them as much as possible. And we have mapped our workforce in terms of those who have got caring responsibilities, particularly around children, so that we're aware of, I think it's now, the school closures have now been announced, that we're aware of those people who might be impacted by that, and therefore we're able to adjust our plans in relation to that. And we have provisions in place in terms of the payment of on-call and agency staff, because we understand that maybe because some of our facilities are closed, they will not be able to provide their services. However, they still need to have an income to be able to support their families. In terms of then potential future actions, in terms of our members, there are delegated powers within our standing orders that may be used going forward in order for decisions to be made. And as I said before, we're going to explore the use of Teams as one way of having remote meetings, but we're going to consider what way decisions can be made going forward so that council services can continue. In terms of facilities, any further facility closures will be based on medical advice. We will repurpose non-critical facilities. So, for instance, community centres, leisure and cultural facilities may be used for other purposes if the community needs those buildings for other things. But obviously we'll make sure that we do have a deep clean of those facilities as required. We will consider the cessation of hot desking so that we don't have different people coming to use the same IT equipment. And we will obviously deep clean any area where a virus has been detected and staff are required to be relocated. In terms of services, we may need to stand down non-essential services. We will help in the coordination of community-based support services where we can. Community planning officers will assist in promoting the COVID-19 related information out to communities. There is the potential perhaps to set up food bank locations within some of our community facilities going forward. And there may be the relaxation of regulations around delivery to shops so that they can replenish supplies outside of what the normal processes would currently be. And obviously we will track the finances in relation to this, and we will prepare what the potential cost of this whole exercise is to council. As I've outlined before, our income will get reduced by some of the decisions that we've made, and yet we still will be incurring costs going forward, particularly around staff. In terms of staff then, we will redeploy non-critical staff to areas where we feel that we may need them. And we will, I suppose, retrain, if we need to, those people to support critical services so that they can be usefully used if they are able to do so. We will explore further for home working and get that pushed out. But as I said, we prioritised the essential services first of all. In terms of return to work policy, it will be an incremental approach in relation to that, and we'll work with our staff in order to get them back to work after this is over. And we will consider the use of retired workers for key services if that is required. And there is the potential maybe to get test kits for senior people in the organisation and the emergency team people, so that people can be tested if they experience a cough fairly quickly to understand whether they have the virus or not. Because if we don't do that, we may have staff who are not impacted but may need to be out of here for 14 days. Whereas if we can test people more quickly, those people, if they don't test positive, can be in work and still contribute to delivering the essential services of council. So in terms then of next steps, as I've said before, this is a fluid and rapidly evolving situation. We will continue to closely monitor the Chief Medical Officer's advice. We will maintain regular contact with the PHA and all the other government agencies and take all the necessary actions that are required. We will maintain close links with our critical suppliers to ensure continuity of supply. We will ensure that we keep discretionary spend under review so that we don't have to dip into our reserves more than we need to. We will look at our future capital plan and potentially may need to reschedule some of those activities going forward, depending on how long this lasts and what the impact is. We will continue to regularly update our elected members and staff on the situation. We will consider the implications of a lockdown scenario and what that might mean for us as an organisation. And we will we'll try to attempt to have some scenarios costed up so that we understand how much COVID would cost us and make an estimate of that, so that we know in terms of our financial sustainability what that looks like for council, and that elected members are aware of that. So closing up, the same message as I started out with, the Public Health Agency, if we continue to do those things, we would hope to try and at least reduce the impact going forward. So happy to take questions on that as much as I can. And Andrea's here from an HR point of view to help me on that in terms of how it impacts on our staff.
Okay, members. Thank you, Sandra, for the presentation and the update and the information. I think it's... we can all see from the press briefings on television, this is, as Sandra said, a very fluid situation, and one which it's very difficult to give precise information all the time. But I want to thank staff for the work that's been put in so far, and the amount of planning that they have been able to do and continue to do, obviously, on a daily basis. Are there questions from Jim?
First of all, thank you very much for that report. It's very detailed and very useful to hear. And it's clearly a lot of time and effort and thought has been put in, both towards the staff and the public, which is heartening, I have to say. Two small questions. The first, you'd mentioned in the first slide that new supplies of IT were being purchased. Are we confident that they will be through quick enough, considering the closure of borders in mainland Europe? Are we confident that they'll be through quick enough to provide to staff if working from home becomes an immediate or very soon issue? And secondly, in relation to the provision of essential services like bin collection, that we have a contingency in place in case there are staff absences from that service.
So, Chair, if I take the first one, we already have sufficient IT equipment to cover the essential services. So in terms of waste, in terms of registration, in terms of the burials and the support service to support those people, we already have the IT equipment in place, and it has been tested so that we know that it works remotely and that we can continue to deliver the essential services for council. So we have that in place already. We have on order some additional equipment, and we're just, you know, incrementally waiting on that equipment coming through. But I am confident that we have sufficient IT equipment and the connectivity for the essential services that have been prioritised within our emergency plan.
Thank you, Sandra. Andrea.
Thank you, Chair. Just to answer the question about the waste, Councillor Montgomery. So I know that there is a contingency plan in place. Geraldine was actually meeting Michael this afternoon to go through that again, because they're obviously keeping that updated daily as well. So the answer to that is yes, there is a contingency in place.
Sorry, Grace, and then...
Thanks very much for that, Sandra. I would very much echo the comments that have been made. I think that was very impressive, and congratulations to you all for pulling that together, and well done to everybody involved. I know it's a very hectic and pressurised time, and it is very much an ever-changing situation, even just for the announcements we've heard from First and Deputy First Minister this evening. My questions very much follow on, and some of them you've answered to a degree. And some of them you may not be in a position to answer this evening, so if you want to revert back to us, that's fine. First of all, they're quite specific. When or have you had what I would term a stress test of your IT capacity or capability, if you have whatever X number of people actually working remotely, to actually see, does it work? You know, can your system sustain those numbers of people? So if you had the maximum number of people at, you know, the very far end of the continuum working remotely, is your system able to sustain that? And the only way you actually know that is if you do it. I know some quite large organisations have picked a time, you know, XR, sent everybody to, you know, actually, or told them actually to work remotely and to test that. And obviously they don't actually need to be home, you know, they can actually try and do that remotely to do that. So my first question is, one, have you done that? If so, what was the outcome? Or two, if you haven't actually done it, are you planning to do it? And my second question, you talked about building on your business continuity plans that you have in place. When was the last time you actually tested your business continuity plan? And then as a follow-up to that, same kind of vein of thinking, if you haven't done it, are you actually planning to do a desktop exercise of your business continuity plan stroke pandemic plan, whatever way you want to describe that, and or both? And then just on the question specifically of laptops, from what you already answered, Sandra, it would appear that you have enough now in stock to meet your, you know, your key essential services. I take it from the answer you've already given, and you're ordering more to provide further backup. I think that would be a fair comment. Maybe if you could just think and give a little more detail, perhaps even share by email, just a little more specific detail about when you're actually expecting those to be delivered. Because I know in some other organisations I'm working with, everybody in the whole of Northern Ireland, if not Europe, is ordering laptops at the minute. So there's a huge demand on laptops. I know some organisations are actually looking to see, and I'm not a technology person, how they can actually, where PCs are available, how they can actually install PCs in people's homes, to actually use PCs working at home, to actually make use of the IT equipment that they have, and adapt those, where people can basically use those remotely. So that might be a contingency which your IT department may wish to consider if you can't physically get additional laptops. I don't know if you've considered that, but I know at least one quite large private sector organisation is considering that as an option, because they are really, really struggling to obtain laptops, and they're based throughout the UK. So that's quite a lot of questions. So if you don't want to respond to those tonight, I'm quite happy that you don't, and they're quite specific. If you want to come back and just share an email around, then that's fine. Thank you so much. But again, the main point is, very well done. Really impressive plan, both covering, I think, every aspect that certainly I would expect to see and a response. So very well done, and very well done to Andrea as well. I'm sort of looking at you because you were the one that delivered it, but very well done to Andrea and other colleagues as well. So I'd like that to be noted formally in the minutes and filtered down to everybody else that was involved in putting that together. So very well done. That's the key point I wanted to be recorded as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I think Sandra just said to me here, we'll try and get as comprehensive an answer as possible for you and put it in an email. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Councillor Webb.
Chair, I just wanted to pick up on Jim's question in relation to waste, and you'll know this from being at the COVID-19 group leader meeting. It was explained to us that the priority will be the black bin waste. We may well have to let the recycling go if we don't have the capacity to be able to keep both going. And with that comes a cost, not just of the landfill additional payment, but it was costed out that with the landfill, the closing of the theatres and the leisure centres, we're looking at £500,000 a month drop of income. And we are one of the fortunate councils that has sufficient reserves. We were told today that some of our colleague councils are potentially going to end up bankrupt. So, good planning, good financial planning. We're in a situation where we can cope with this.
Okay, thank you, Billy. Councillor Hamill.
Thank you, Chair. And again, Sandra, thank you for that detailed presentation. Just a couple of things. The staff, again, I suppose I'm thinking more of those who are doing the funerals and working on that face, that they're quite specifically trained. And I imagine if they go down, is there the capacity there within your staff to cover them? That's the first question. I have a couple more.
Do you want to ask the
question? Do you want them all? So the other one is, you mentioned there about testing some members of staff in order to keep them on the front line. Is there any plans to test some of the top CLT and maybe even the members, because that they could be kept on the front line too to represent the constituents? And the third one was just around, because we have hospitals in our borough, is there any direct linkages and working with the hospitals to see what we as a council can do to help support them directly?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So maybe just to take those in the same order, Councillor Hamill, so in the cemeteries, we have, as you've said, trained staff who are used to doing that work, which does require a particular skill set in itself. And I know that within the immediate team, we know who they are. Within the broader parks team, where we can train staff as a standby, we will. But the bigger plan relates to contractors that we have to pull off a tender list. Actually, that's all in place should we need them, because they obviously need to know what they're doing there too. So that's in place and is part of Geraldine's contingency plan around the burials. There will also be guidance from the various professional bodies in relation to how that all should be managed and handled, as there will be for the registration of deaths, which is changing in itself through the legislation in terms of how that ought to be done, and the guidance around that will be released this Friday. So that will be fed down to the registration team, and they'll operationalise that as soon as that's received. In relation to the tests, once we get those, certainly your point's absolutely valid. It will be to test the elected members and the people who are mission critical for getting the essential services out and maintained, so we can finalise the arrangements around that for sure. But that would be necessary.
Just on that, when it's coming to me here, can the public, if they want to be tested, is there any opportunity for them to do that? Or is that something that we as a council can provide a facility for with a charge or whatever?
I think that's an issue for the Department of Health, Councillor Hamill, and not something I'm sure the council would want to take responsibility for. I think that, I mean, we could raise it with the Department of Health, but I don't think it's within our remit to carry out those tests, because they have to be properly carried out and the results properly communicated. I don't think our staff would be trained. I mean, if we opened up the possibility to the general public, I mean, you have a population of 120,000 people and under my Newton Abbey, and you just see them all beating up after this door. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's something that we should be going, not a path we should be going down, but it is certainly something worth raising with the department.
It just comes from the fact that I noticed Randox, who are in our borough again, have a test, and our government as yet haven't picked up on that. And yet the message that's coming from the public health agency is test, test, test. And I was just seeing if there's anything that us as a local council could be doing to help that. You know.
I think the most important thing we can do about it is raise awareness of it, of the need for the testing, and make the department aware of the fact that Randox is, you know, on our doorstep and has a test available, and encourage them as far as possible to acquire the tests and make sure that there are people available to carry the tests out in the proper ways. I mean, I think Sandra's making a note of it here, and certainly we can start doing that. But and I appreciate what you're raising the issue, but I do think it's outside our remit. So
my understanding is that even frontline medical staff at the moment aren't getting access to testing, which is obviously very concerning to me as a medical personnel. So I'd be quite interested to see how it pans out, you know, with testing even for frontline staff here or for members, you know, if medical staff aren't getting testing. But I agree, community testing needs to be stepped up. But as has already been pointed out, we probably have limited powers here.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just in a way it's connected to the, you know, the third point, Councillor Hamill, in terms of hospitals in the borough and working with them. I know there's a regional civil contingency group to coordinate what is needed and where and when across, you know, all public authorities, local authorities, etc. And the trusts are part, they will feed into that coordinating group. So it will become clear through it. There are regular updates, and certainly the chief executives would have a representative on that group who then updates the chief executive group. And so it will become, I think, clear each day how local authorities can actually support that coordinated central plan, and if that links into hospitals then within our area in practical ways, that might be the route through which it becomes clearer, as well as anything else that might overtake that plan if it moves at such a pace. But there is a central coordination group there designed to try and get the help to where it's most needed at the right time and in the right way.
Okay.
Can I come back?
Sorry, great. Councillor Bennington.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Sandra, for the presentation and all the staff who helped pull that together. It's very informative. I've been good to have maybe received that a wee bit earlier, but by the way, it's by the now. A couple of points that you made on it, changes to standing orders. What changes are you anticipating to standing orders? Do we know that yet? And also the second point would be bringing back retired personnel. I was led to believe that some of the retired personnel had contracts where the contract was written that they weren't allowed to come back to work in the council because they're finished, and that was it, done and dusted. So can somebody update us on that as well, please? Thank you.
So in terms of the change to standing orders, we believe as a council that we actually don't need to change standing orders, but we understand that Belfast got a change made to theirs, but there already is delegated powers to the chief executive and directors to make decisions in an emergency. So we understand that that is sufficient for us, but we're just ensuring that that is correct through our legal people.
Yep. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So in relation to the retired personnel, we would refer to, you know, the use of retired personnel where we really, you know, do need a resource that we don't currently have. So albeit that they may have left either recently or some time ago, it will be as needs must, all hands to the pump. It's a very set of unusual circumstances, and it's definitely not something we would ordinarily do. But if it meant that we could deliver our essential services in a way that, you know, kept things open and doing the business as we needed to, absolutely, it would be a route that we would go down to secure the right skills in the right place at the right time. There are a number of other arrangements prior to getting to that, but it would certainly be still an option for us if we needed to do that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the responses there. It's just, as an elected member, I would like to be kept informed of any decision making that has to be done. I've been elected by my local people to be in this chair tonight and to make decisions on behalf of the council.
Just to clarify, officers will be making decisions without sanction of the mayor or group leaders. Any decisions that will be taken will be discussed with group leaders, and it will be up to the group leaders to confer with the members of their group and to get agreement within the group that on the course of action that's being proposed. This is not going to turn into a situation where officers are making decisions without the proper authority. And so just to make that clear, and I think that applies to both the changes to standing orders and to the use or the potential use of retired officers. I don't think it's legally possible for officers to change the standing orders anyway. It has to be done by the membership, so there's no question of that arising in the first place. And I think, as Andrea has made the point, these are extraordinary measures for extraordinary times, and I think that we have to bear that in mind and as we're going forward. There, we are going to perhaps have to take decisions that, in ordinary circumstances, would not be contemplated. But that's, we are where we are here, and going forward. So, I know, as the Sinn Féin group leader, that I'll be briefing my party group. I'm sure the other group leaders will be doing the same. If you think you're not getting the relevant information, then I think your first protocol should be to your party group leader. There's an email briefing on today's meeting has gone out to all members today, outlining much of the information that's in there and a lot of other information besides. So we will... staff and the senior management team will endeavour to keep members as fully informed about what is happening and what's being done and the changes that are being proposed on a daily basis. So I think that's where we are with that, and I assure you that we're not contemplating a coup by officers. So, okay. I'll come back to Grace with Jim.
First of all, I would like to support what Andrea just said about bringing back staff that have retired. It is a case of get what we need when we need it to do what we need. So totally support that. And I personally have full confidence in my group leader that he will act on behalf of my constituents and all constituents and as part of that team. So I'd agree with what you said, Chair, as well. In relation to a morbid issue, and one I hope doesn't happen, but if there was a spike in the number of deaths in the worst case scenario, are we in a position to facilitate increased burials?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So, Councillor Montgomery, the business continuity plan for that situation is in place. And the key for us, if we, you know, if there's a high rate of burials at the same time, would be to, and we've used all our own staff teams, so there's a tolerance within the business continuity plan around what that looks like. Once we go past that threshold, then we're into using two contractors that we have and can use to come in and do any further burials above what we can do ourselves.
would there be flexibility around public holidays, things like that, to bury on days that normally we wouldn't be?
I think everything is absolutely possible, depending on the set of circumstances we face. I think positively, the staff so far, it's been really heartening, actually. You know, they're just stepping up as teams and getting on with it. And even talking to one of the trade union officials on the way to this meeting, actually, whilst you're going to meet different responses along the way, there are, on balance, more people who are interested in helping other people in the community who need it the most. So if we have fit and able staff, then whatever way we can turn that resource into help for people who need it more than them or us, there, I think, are more people who are willing to do that than not, which is really very positive. So we're hoping that that's the way it will remain, so that as a collective force, we can support the people who absolutely need it and who are very frightened, vulnerable, don't have half of, you know, what many of us would have, to make sure that we get to them.
Thank you.
Kristen, back in.
We share the same interest in the world of pensions and bereavements, maybe sadly. So that was exactly the question, Chair, that I was going to pose about the potential spike in bereavements, because I work in pensions, as most of you know. So that was actually my concern, which I think you've answered very well, because we are also preparing in my day job, sadly, for a potential, which we all hope doesn't come, but given what we've heard to date, it's sadly what we are preparing for an increase in potential bereavement. So I think it's good to be prepared for that, and I think it's very reassuring, and I would add, sadly, that you are prepared for that and looking at flexibilities and contingencies, because I think the last thing that people want in Northern Ireland is to have a long delay between the death of a loved one and the actual funeral occurring. I think that just adds to people's grief, just given our traditions in Northern Ireland. So I think it's very good and commendable that council are looking to see how they can ensure that there isn't an undue delay. So I would commend the efforts of council for that. And I think it's particularly helpful that you're working on that, and I would encourage you to do that and to explore every option possible. I suppose in a good way, it's good that we're coming into the brighter days, so you can look at longer opening times. You could look at potentially opening and doing burials over the weekend, which we haven't done before, which I know does happen in country areas, if I can use that term, on a Sunday. Whether that would be acceptable to council or not, I don't know. But I think, as you've said, Andrew, I think every possibility should be considered, because it does definitely, given our culture in Northern Ireland, it just definitely does add to the grief and trauma that families go through if there's an extended time. So that was exactly the question I was going to ask. So thank you very much for that reassurance, Andrew, that you're asking that. So I've taken too long saying that's good, and then I would have had asking the question. So thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much. Okay, members, just reiterate that this is a very fluid situation. There is a daily meetings of various kinds, and there will be an email update to members as at least daily, I think. So keep, if you have questions about what's happening, or check there, and I'm sure officers will be available to respond to any questions you might have regarding that in the future. Well, thank you. So we have to move on to, we have another presentation, this time on the Corporate Improvement Plan 2021. As you know, this went out for public consultation very recently, at the end of February. It is already, I think, being impacted by the current situation. The problem is that we are working to a timetable set by central government, by the executive and the assembly. So there's an issue there about we have to have this in place by consulted on and in place by June. I think that it might be prudent for us to revert back to the department and ask if it's possible to look at an alternative date given the circumstances. So I think Helen's going to talk us through the plan, but maybe at the end if we could have a proposer and seconder for that course of action. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So as the Chair said, although we just approved this, and it's a very ambitious plan, probably one of the most ambitious plans yet, and it reflects the members' desires and needs to improve the borough. I think it's fair to say that some of the targets will need to be changed to reflect the current circumstances. So if you bear that in mind. So it is out for consultation. The consultation closes on the 25th of May. And we will bring another plan back in June to the Audit Committee, but we will take the advice and consult with the department, see if there any leniency in terms of the deadlines. Just to kind of, if you're happy enough, I'll just whiz through this. If I get the mouse to work. Just a wee bit, actually, isn't it? Okay, so just if I set the Copper Improvement Plan in the context of the strategic landscape. So it sits within the draft programme for government and under that there, of all the regional strategies. So within the council environment, at the centre there, we have the corporate plan, but it's supported then by a number of other plans, so like the local development plan, the community plan, the council strategies, other council financial strategies, other HR strategies, whatever. And so it all comes together in terms of overall improvement, fitting in with this, the overall programme of government. And then that is cascaded down to employees right across the organisation through the whole sort of performance appraisal type process. So the performance improvement and the reason for the Corporate Improvement Plan, it sits within the Local Government Act of 2014. And that act says that our Corporate Improvement Plan has to include four areas. So the plan should include all our corporate improvement objectives, and those I'll take you through those objectives tonight. It should also include our self-imposed improvement objectives, and these are for all our departments. So the plan needs to reflect all our 16 service areas and how we're going to improve each of those service areas. A separate presentation is given to the standing committees for those, and they will happen early June. The plan should also include statutory objectives and also governance arrangements. I can nearly speak. So in terms of setting the scene in terms of our progress, so this has been in operation since 2015, and I think it's fair to say we have robust processes and systems in place, and those have been, the Audit Committee are very much part and parcel of that and are constantly challenging us to improve in terms of that. And we have been recognised by the Audit Office in terms of our governance arrangements, in terms of our good practice. So we have good processes and systems in place and constantly improving. Last year was the first time the Audit Office actually did an assessment of overall improvement. So has the council improved? And the report came back and that was given to you in November. And that said that the council has demonstrated an improvement. The next stage of the journey is around benchmarking and best practice. And yes, we are definitely meeting the legislation in terms of benchmarking. And in fact, in the good practice guide that came out from the Audit Office, they congratulated us and said that we are an example of best practice there. But we have a lot of work to do. We're meeting the legislation, but we recognise that there is work to be done there. Working with a regional group and to move that forward, but we will continue to do our own work. And I suppose that's all leading us to this high-performing council. So we have our vision, and we are driven by ambition, and certainly this plan reflects that ambition. So I'm not going to go through these here. So if I go through... Can't go back. So I've talked this here. In terms of the legislation, the legislation says that our corporate improvement plan should link, every objective in it should link to the community plan and the corporate plan. We must see a clear link. The objectives must be measurable, and all of the objectives should link into one of these objectives. So they should be either strategically effective, it should demonstrate quality, it should demonstrate service availability. They either should be sustainable, demonstrate innovation or efficiency. So every one of our objectives have to at least meet one of those. So we have six objectives, and I'm not going to go through all of the performance indicators because there are lots this year. Members have really been ambitious. So our first objective is to increase the level of recycling and the amount of waste sent to landfill. First target is to increase that recycling rate, and our target for 2021 is 57%. So you can see over the last 3 years that the increase from 52% to 57%, so that steady increase in terms of recycling, contributing not only to financial stability, and because waste is such a huge financially imperative for the organisation, but it also the environment. We're going to minimise the amount of waste sent to landfill, and again, you can see that steady decline. So the target for 2021 is 23,000. This is a statutory target, and it's the amount of biodegradable waste that is landfilled. So you can see even last year's figure, 2019-20, the target is 16,000, but we're projecting at the end of March that we will have landfilled about 10,500 tonnes. So that's not our target. The amount of tonnage collected of waste arisings, and again, that's very much demand-led. And the number of days to collect our bulky waste. So our target is 5. However, you can see that we have, in the last number of years, always strived and achieved to actually reduce that and not have the 5 days. And improving customer satisfaction is very much a thread of the whole plan. And so increasing the customer satisfaction with waste and recycling services and maintaining that at a figure of 85%. But again, you can see the increase there. And then the cost of waste disposal and landfill tax, so a target of 80%. £80 even. Okay, objective 2. Is we are going to improve the level of attractiveness of our borough. And this obviously is very important for members, very important for our residents, and it's making our borough even better. And so the target of satisfaction with the attractiveness of our borough at 78%, and you can see the huge increase year on year in terms of what our residents are think in terms of the attractiveness of the borough. So from 43% in 17-18 to 75% projected figure for this year and 78% for next year. Again, resident satisfaction with parks and open spaces, a target of 88% for next year. Again, a good increase there. Residents who feel proud of their surroundings. So aiming to a target of 80%, which is a significant target leap in terms of the projected target for 19-20. But again, that reflects that the work that's been done across the borough and the investment in the borough. The number of community cleanups. So reflecting again the attractiveness of the borough and the pride of the borough, and you can see that big increase of community cleanups. This is new for 2021. It's about linking again, obviously, to the attractiveness of the borough, but it's about introducing our own grading system, our own quality management system for cleanliness of the borough and grading the streets, our roads and streets. So it's a target of 80% of the roads and streets are graded at A or B, which is high standard. The next set of indicators are around benchmarking and best practice. So the number of green flags, we strive to achieve 20 green flags in the borough. We want to maintain accreditation for the benchmarking survey for environmental management and, you know, have a platinum, achieve platinum there. So again, you can see where we have gone from silver to platinum. We have retaining our ISO standard for environmental management, and that we are in the second top quartile for the Northern Ireland Beautiful Report. And alongside that, because we know it's not easy, and it's keeping going that enforcement piece, and having the number of, measuring the number of fixed penalties and having that in the second quartile, again, of a benchmarking report. Third objective, members, is around customer satisfaction. So the essence of this objective is about maintaining consistently high customer services and getting underneath and the sort of the what customers are telling us and in behind and kind of dig deep in terms of improving. So what do we want to do? We want to maintain, we want to achieve an 85% satisfaction with overall council services. That is a, that's a very high figure actually in customer satisfaction. I think when we benchmark that against other public sector organisations, other private sector organisations, that's you know, that's as high as really that organisations can get. To achieve more would be brilliant. Again, looking at our website, trying to achieve a target of 85%, and you can see again the 68 to 85, that constant improvement. Our satisfaction with borough life, trying to achieve a target of 85%. Again, you can see the targets. This satisfaction with the council's residence app. This is a new one. It's new for and it'll achieving a target of 87%. Number of recorded visits to the website, aiming for 2.3 million. And again, you can just see that steady increase. Number of downloads of the app, aiming to achieve just over 8,000 downloads. Number of followers on social media, just over 40,000. So again, you can see that steady increase there from 17,000 when started this process to 40,000. Abandoned calls is new, a new one for this for the plan, and it's really getting in behind sort of our abandoned calls, what's causing them, why is that happening, and reducing that target to 7.5%. And establishing baseline customer satisfaction across all core service areas for all channels. So it's looking at waste, leisure, building control, theatres, and looking at face-to-face, online, telephone, and getting, you know, analysing the stats for all of those areas and to see where we demonstrate improvement. And then to culminate all of that there into a new customer strategy, customer standards, and rolling that out programme of training and improvement out. And I suppose supporting that there with feedback from customers in terms of the consultations and ensuring those that consultation we're constantly asking, and to have a target of 60 consultations carried out in the next year with a target of 4,000 surveys. Okay, leisure centres, so obviously continuing
the health of improving the health of the borough, and using our leisure centres to do that is very important to members. So what were the targets that you've set is that we have a target for 2021 of 2.25 million. And then you can see really that significant increase from 1.3 to 2.25. That may change, you know, in light of circumstances. These figures may change. Increasing the number of people taking out memberships, a target of 10,000. Again, you can see that steady increase. The subsidy per visit, reducing it to within leisure centres to 1.60. And again, you can see that steady decline. Increase in participation in leisure centre activity programmes, having a target of 20%. Okay, so objective five is that we will increase staff attendance across council. So members will know that the link between employee engagement, wellness programmes and high performance is well recognised, and hence the reason that this is here. And it's the average target for the average number of days lost per employee is set at 12. Improving or increasing the 100% attendance levels of staff from 57 to 60. And that has just increased over the last number of years as well. Ensuring that employees will have a 99% of employees have a personal development plan, and that we run accredited development programs, and the target for that is 40. And maintaining that employee engagement levels at 85%. And finally, I know this is close to members' hearts in terms, and Sandra's heart, is to make sure that our suppliers are paid on time, and never more than now. And it's achieving that 80% of our invoices are paid within 10 days, and that 90% of our invoices are paid within 30 days. So members, just to reiterate, this is a consultation phase, and we will listen to the feedback, we will speak to the department, and we'll bring the plan back to yourselves again in June.
Okay, thank you, Helen. I think members, a fairly comprehensive run through the corporate improvement plan. So, Jim?
First of all, Helen, thanks very much for the great detail. To say you were very diplomatic in saying some of the targets may change, they will have to change. First of all, can I make a proposal, Chair, that we write to the department and ask for extra time to submit, to work on and submit our corporate improvement.
Thank you.
Because clearly changes do have to be made, targets do have to be amended to reflect reality. Some of the targets in a full year are challenging, ambitious, but achievable. And that's now not the case. We can't deliver the same standards within 9-10 months instead of a full calendar year. So we do need to change our corporate improvement plan. One question, one comment. And as actually Billy had referred to it earlier, just the possible effect on recycling, if things get bad, you know that the focus will be on back bins. I think the targets that are welcome but are detailed in the report may be affected by that, but also by the change in practice and the rolling out of the stack system. And I was wondering, is there any risk to delay of that rolling out of the new system because of what's going on, which could then carry through in us not meeting our targets, either that we've set ourselves or our statutory targets? And the comment I would make is the percentage of roads and streets inspected are graded at a satisfactory standard ARB. I do not believe that should be a target for us, because that is totally out of our control. The standard of streets is down to DFI. We can't do anything as a corporate body about potholes, so why we are measuring ourselves on something that is beyond our control. I don't believe that should be in there.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Montgomery. We take on board the first point. The director who is responsible for that isn't here this evening, so can't get an answer directly this evening, but we'll raise it with her and ask her to reply to you by email directly. And secondly, seek clarification on the roads issue as well. My understanding of it is that it's road street cleaning rather than the road surface and so on. But we'll get clarification on that as for you as well. Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Roisin. Thank you, Councillor Lynch.
Through the chair, yes, certainly this is the consultation phase, so certainly happy to reflect that in the plan.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a seconder for Councillor Montgomery's proposal that we write to the department?
Second that.
Councillor Webb, thank you. I'll just make the point that this is a consultation period, and part of the problem with the timeline that we have got is that a lot of the consultation that we are hoping to be able to do is not going to be able to take place over the next weeks and months, so we aren't going to get a comprehensive feedback from ratepayers on the plan. So that's part of why we're wanting to put it back. Sorry, did you want to as well, Councillor Webb? Yep, go ahead.
I just want to ask, Chair, if we, and we have to look at some of the figures that are used there, do we have to go back out to consultation then if there is a major revision of some of this?
No. Helen? No.
To the Chair, it's a good question and something that certainly I'll pose to the department if it's a complete rewrite. If it's a revision of the targets and the main thrust of it is the same, probably not. But it's something I would certainly reflect with the department.
Okay, Chris?
Yeah, my question was once again along a similar vein. And I'm just wondering, just remind me, Helen, when did the consultation start?
Started on the 1st of March and it finishes on the 25th of April, or 25th of May.
Right, so it hasn't actually started all that long, and is the consultation, I'm assuming it's online and by hard copy as well?
Yes.
So it certainly would be possible to issue a little addendum, certainly online, to say that the targets, just in the light of the virus, I mean, it's just a thought that the targets in this, because everybody's aware of it, the targets in this are in the process of being reviewed, but if council members were in agreement, which of course I'm not, if council members were in agreement, because let's face it, it's blatantly obvious that some of the targets, I mean, like if leisure centres have closed with effect from today, I mean, that's obviously going to impact on the targets for leisure centres. And if, you know, if we're not able to collect the, what colour are the bins? The brown bins? The brown bins, then that's going to impact on that. So, you know, that's just two very obvious examples. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's others that are going to be impacted, that if you put out something even online, that if council membership was agreeable to that across all the parties, that would at least flag up to people that there was at least the possibility or the risk of that, whatever it was, you can think of a phrasing to that. And then at least it would save you going out through the process of consultation. It's just a thought that you may wish to consider as a council whenever you meet again as group leaders. But certainly, I think you should be, again, definitely flagging to the department, because this is an issue across all councils and across a number of on a whole raft of issues, not just this, where consultations are underway and things are, let's face it, turned upside down because of this, you know, so. And the public are going to get tired of commenting on this and then having to comment on another document, and they're just not going to want to do that. So if the thrust of what you're saying is substantially the same, and you're just having to say, well, we're going to do it in X months instead of 12 months, then I think that's then reasonable. And I think, you know, residents would think that's reasonable as well. But I think the sooner you alert them to that, maybe by a message online, I think the sooner people know that, the better, would be my view as an independent member and also as a resident of the borough as well. So maybe I hope that's helpful, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Jim?
I agree with the notification being sent out to the public. You know, totally supportive of that. The targets are good, they're challenging, but it's to the benefit of everybody, but we have to be realistic. So maybe one way of doing it is a pro rata basis.
Yeah.
That there is targets and we base it 9 months instead of 12 months, whatever.
Or just say whatever, whenever things become, I don't want to use the word normal. But
I think the problem is because this is a process that's applied to all 11 councils, it's something we have to get agreement for from the department. It's just not just a matter of us deciding that, well, we're only going to count from, you know, the end of June or whatever and pro rata the targets. We have to get agreement on that. So I think that's why we need to direct in the department. So,
but I think you could put something up on the website, a more general form of words, Chair, if I could just continue to say that you will prorate it from when, I wouldn't use the term normal service resume, somebody could think of a more appropriate form of words, but basically to say that, so I wouldn't actually put a date on it, because we don't actually know when normal service will resume.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put June or a date on it, because we don't know when that date's going to be, the idea of saying, you know, it will be prorated, I think that principle would be a very good principle. I don't see any objection to saying that now, but perhaps you would need the agreement of other councils even to say that, Chair. I don't know.
Okay, thank you. We'll take those comments on board. Okay, if no other questions, we'll move on then to item 4.1. Or it's the internal audit strategy for 2020-2023 and the audit plan for 2020-2021. So I think Paul's going to take us through that. Both the strategy and the plan are are there with your papers. So.
Thank you, Chair. As the Chair said, both the internal audit plan and then the more in-depth 60-page strategy have been provided, and I'm sure you've all read it diligently. As you know, members, internal audit needs to provide an annual audit opinion to yourselves, to those charged with governance, as well as the Chief Executive. To enable me to provide that opinion, I have to base that opinion on the work undertaken throughout the year, and that requires me to ensure that there's appropriate audit coverage across the Council, which enables me to provide that robust opinion. So what we do then at this time of the year is we develop a risk-based audit strategy, which is the bigger document, and that involves analysing out all the service risks within the Council, allocating the specific areas within the Council, the business or the audit needs, as I call them, against those risks, and then consulting with the senior management team and the corporate leadership team to identify any specific areas of concern or risk that they may have, which they would wish to be included within the audit plan going forward. That has been done, and that has been produced, as I say, the first enclosure within that. So that's the audit plan for next year, which sets out the audits I propose to do. That plan has been agreed by CLT. And as something similar with the corporate improvement plan, that plan is based on a full resource on a 12-month calendar period. So that's something that we will have to keep an eye on in terms of the arrangements in place for the Council over the next 12 months. But that's something we would do anyway throughout the year. We would always look at the audit plan, the delivery of the audit plan, and we'll report back to the audit committee on that. It is also worth noting that the plan is flexible as well. Where arrangements, circumstances throughout the year change, where more high-risk areas maybe are highlighted to myself or through the management team, we can amend and update the plan as we go along. And again, that will be done through agreement and approval of CLT and yourselves as the audit committee. The plan itself, I don't really want to go through because it's quite an in-depth document, but it really just highlights the approach to the development of the audit plan as well as the risk analysis itself. And it also provides some additional detail in terms of the internal audit charter, reporting mechanisms for internal audit. So I'm happy to take any questions on the plan, if members have any.
Okay, members, any questions? Okay, thank you. Can I have a proposer and seconder then for the recommendation to item 4.1, please?
Happy to propose.
Thank you. Councillor Bennington, thank you. Moving on then to 4.2, the review of the effectiveness of the Audit Committee 2019-20. And the results of this review are also enclosed among your papers. Paul is going to, I think, make some comments.
Thank you, Chair. Members, this document came out of our workshop that we had at the start of February. As well as I provided the draft report to yourselves there on the 27th of February. The report itself outlines the results of your self-assessment, should I say, as well as the actions that were agreed to enhance the effectiveness of the Audit Committee going forward into next year. Again, not wanting to go through the report in any detail, so I'm happy to take questions on the report itself if members have any.
Okay, any questions, members? No. Thank you. Have a proposer and seconder for the recommendation, please. Councillor Bennington.
Happy to propose the recommendation, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Hamill. Thank you. Moving on then to item 5, items for information. Item 5.1, the Northern Ireland Audit Office, Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council audit of 2019-2020 statement of accounts and audit strategy. And again, that document is enclosed with your papers. The recommendation is that the report be noted. Councillor Webb.
Move it be noted.
Thank you. Councillor Bennington.
Seconded.
Thank you. Item 5.2, the Corporate Improvement Plan 2019-20. Quarter 3 Improvement Objectives Progress Report. The third quarter report is enclosed for your attention. Do you have any questions on the report? The items are for noting, so I have a proposer and seconder. Thank you.
Move the recommendation, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Bennington. Seconder, Councillor Hamill.
Happy to second.
Thank you. Item 5.3, the update on audit committee actions. You can see there that there is a table to provide a progress update on the actions raised. There was one outstanding item, but I think that is almost complete. It's still in progress, actually. It's the Performance Improvement Audit and Assessment Report for 1920. But other than that, everything is completed. And that, again, is recommendation, or as it should be noted. Councillor Webb?
Move it be noted.
Thank you. Councillor Bennington?
Seconded.
Thank you. Item 5.4, the internal audit update report, which is again enclosed for your consideration. Again, Paul is going to say a few words on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So this report provides a summary of audit activity since we last met in December. There's a few items that we would just like to draw your attention to. I would like to highlight that there has been a change in this and this year's plan, and that is in relation to an audit that was included in the health and safety side of the council with regards to risk assessments. We've decided to defer that audit until next year, and you will see that audit has been included within the 2021 plan. The reason for that deferral is a new risk assessment software has been purchased, and we thought it would be a better use of the internal audit resource to wait until such times as any new processes or procedures have been developed, as well as the software itself has been embedded within the council. So we will probably look to provide any assurances over the new software and the new risk assessment processes towards the latter half of the next audit year. If we move on then to the audit plan itself, that deferral has been incorporated within the plan, as you can see there from the status of the audit plan. We have had a good progression of the plan. We are starting to get close to the closeout of this plan. As you can see there, we have four audits still in the fieldwork stage, and we have two audits within the draft report stage. Obviously, I would like to highlight to members that with the current situation, it has been quite difficult to get staff and managers to be available to progress. So we will work hopefully closely with them going forward to try and progress as soon as possible. You will see then we have closed out two audits within the year. One was within the community small grants area. And this was an advisory piece where I sat and I worked with the community planning team in terms of trying to develop a better way to vouch small grants to make it less bureaucratic for the grant recipients as well as staff. And I think members will remember, I think in December, a council report outlined a pilot vouching process for small grants. So that was our body of work, and we'll revisit that once the pilot has completed. The second audit we completed was a review of the facilities management section, where they introduced a new facilities management software. And we reviewed its implementation and whether that software mitigated any of the concerns that were raised through our previous audit back in May 2017. As you can see, members, we provided a satisfactory level of assurance over that new piece of software, and we have not raised any findings as a result of that. Due to the clean audit reports, as highlighted there, I'm not going to go into any further detail on the audits themselves. I'm happy to take questions on them if you have, but the information and there's more details available there. The remainder of the report, as always, provides just details of the follow-up status of recommendations within the council. It is currently sitting at 100% fully implemented, which is very good. We're hoping to continue that into the end of the financial year for my business KPI, as well as the council's going forward. We also provide details of other audit activity, which is in section 4 of the report, which was undertaken, as well as our own internal quality assurance and improvement programme stats, which shows 100% on target for our four internal KPIs, as well as achieving an average score of 4.97 out of 5 for satisfaction. Happy to take any questions if members have any.
Thank you, members. Any questions?
Very disappointed at the 0.3 drop, but anyway.
You're disappointed, have been noted.
Yeah, that could be noted. No, seriously, Paul, very, very well done and very well presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the report was therefore noted. Can I have a proposer and seconder for the recommendation?
Very happy to propose, Paul.
Thank you, Grace. Councillor Montgomery. Thank you. Okay, members, item 5.3, the corporate risk register. I think Sandra has just one item to update us on.
Thank you, Chair.
I wonder if you could guess what that might be.
So we have reviewed all of the risks on the corporate risk register as we do on a regular basis, and I just want to highlight the new risk to you, which is the COVID-19.
So it's described as failure to adequately address the impact on council services and events of the virus. And we have looked at, or we have assessed this risk according to our risk management strategy and the procedures that we have in place. So, I mean, in terms of implications, it is around the increase in absence, the social disruption, the economic disruption, service delivery and facility provision, and the potential closure of facilities. So those are all the implications of this. We have our action plan in place and our pandemic plan. So rather than, I suppose, regurgitating a lot of stuff within the risk register, we refer in terms of our controls to our contingency plan, to our continuity plan, business continuity plans, and to our action plan that we have in place for COVID-19. So despite all of those things, it still appears as a red risk on our corporate risk register. And I suppose that's particularly around when we score against financial impact, staff impact, service impact, stakeholder impact, and likelihood, because we're in it, the likelihood is four, it's high. So that's why that is a high risk. But I mean, obviously we'll continue to review this on an ongoing basis and report back to committee on all of our risks, including this one.
Okay, members, any questions? Right. Well, I think from the presentation previously, you can see that this is a risk that we're taking extremely seriously and dealing with it as appropriately as we can. Moving on then to item six, Getting that time of the night, I'm moving on too quickly. Can I have a proposer and seconder to note the Councillor Bennington?
Recommend the report be noted, Chair.
Councillor Webb?
Chair.
Thank you. All right, items in committee. Members, can we have a proposer and seconder to take the remainder of the Council business in committee, please?
So moved.
Thank you, members. We now move into committee and the audio recording will cease at this point. Proposer and seconder to move out of committee, please. Councillor Bennington. Councillor Webb.
Seconded.
Thank you. Thank you, members. The audio recording will now restart. Thank you, members. That draws a close to the Audit Committee meeting, Antrim and Newtownabbey Borough Council on Wednesday, the 18th of March, 2020. Please make sure your microphones are switched off.